Hey, we're live here, Pine Tree Studios, Testimony House, New John Simmons Show. I have an amazing duo of people here to hang out with this evening. Greg and Connor, man, how you guys doing?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing great, man. This is exciting times. I just met you guys a few weeks ago, months ago. You guys put together, well, I know Greg from my days in the dealing at the poker room, right? So that's where we met, back in the casino, early 2004. But more recently, I met Connor and Greg. They're connected through... what do you guys call what you do?
We're just recovery, man. Recovery. We're out here spreading the message.
Yeah, you guys have a recovery support group that you guys run on Tuesdays.
Yes.
And you guys have both recently got out of recovery yourselves, right?
Yeah. We're in recovery.
In recovery.
Okay.
Yep.
Just got out of addiction.
Okay. All right. Hey, I like the terminology. Yeah. So, me too. I mean, I was a gambling addict 10 plus years, but I've been sober a long time, so I haven't been in the recovery space, so I appreciate the terminology.
Absolutely.
So, let's start with Connor, since he's my new friend here, you know, and then we'll sort of bounce back and forth between your guys' stories. So tell me a little bit about the recovery group that you guys work on.
We work on a recovery group. It started out me and Greg just wanting to give back and really give back to the community.
Yeah.
And we were thinking, what's the best place we can start? Do we want to start with addicts, or do we want to start with maybe the families and the loved ones of the addicts? So we, through ACPD, we were able to open the doors for basically a parent and loved one help group for them.
Yeah, Art Dino runs ACPD. It's a recovery program that helps people who are struggling and helps them get in places where they can get help for their drug addiction most of the time. I met him through another mutual friend of ours. It's a small world that's going around, Matt. Shout out to Matt Edwards. And we made a Testimony House made a video for ACPD. So if anybody wants to learn more about ACPD and the great work they do, you can just scroll down a couple videos in our YouTube channel. Greg, so this is a long way from where I remember meeting, you know, you and me hung out together a lot back in the day, working together, both of us in a different season of life back then. You know, I was in the midst of a gambling addiction. I remember you used to drink a lot.
I drink a lot.
Yeah. So I had this picture. We went out to drink one night, and I'm not trying to put all your trash out there, but I think it's good to let people know where we used to be and where we're at today.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? So I remember you used to drink more. Like cans of Bud Light or Bud Bush or whatever it was.
Yep.
That, like, a lot of us could drink at the casino. A lot of guys that we worked with burned the candle at both ends, right?
Absolutely.
A lot of drinking, a lot of gambling, a lot of cigarettes, a lot of other stuff, you know.
Combination of all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and so your devices varied, but we all like to burn some of them, you know. And so for you're the champion of beer, you know. It's like watching you drink, you know, 24 or sometimes even two cases of, you know, beer in an evening. I'm just like, why did you do that? That was you, though. How did you get into that kind of lifestyle?
Started drinking when I was 13.
Yeah.
As a little kid, just wanted to try it out, and you know, from that I was hooked from the very first drink.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it had me early.
Yeah.
Ended up in the hospital that night with alcohol poisoning.
When you're 13?
13.
Was it like your parents' booze?
My mom found me. No, it was one of the neighbor kids' alcohol.
Wow. Mm.
We had broke into their liquor cabinet.
And you ended up at the hospital?
In the hospital.
Was that scary, or was it?
I couldn't wait to do it again, honestly.
Really?
So a week later, we broke into the cabinet again. But
they didn't
used
get
a little
the lock.
More.
They got to get a better lock.
Back for the seconds.
We pulled the cabinet out, took the screws off the back of the cabinet.
The screws. You
right,
locked the screws.
Right.
Got in through it from the back way and put it back.
Yeah, where you were heading, you knew that there was no locks that could hold you back from getting to it. Oh my gosh, man.
Typical addiction story.
Yeah. No, that's not typical. I don't know. Like, the first time, because I was a gambler, so the first time I played gambling games was on a poker site called PokerRoom.net. We used to play $5 tournaments. I played like a $5 tournament every weekend with my family.
Okay.
Like, my family was involved. And then eventually, I didn't get hooked until I found my way in the casino for the first time. I played a cash game, and it was right after Moneymaker happened, and I, you know, got the experience of, you know, betting it all and smoking and your cigarettes. It's way different than, like, clicking a mouse. And so for me, I was like, I'm chasing that high or whatever. So, you know, addiction comes in different many ways.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep.
So you're
absolutely.
You're 13, though.
Yep.
What? And so how does it sort of escalate?
Started when I got to high school, was able to drive. I was not scared to go down to East St. Louis.
Yeah.
Because back in the 80s, everyone had a gun in the car, you know, because we got done hunting, we were allowed to bring the, you know, you could have the guns in your car. And so I was never afraid to go down to East St. Louis, and if you could drive through Max's Liquor, they would sell you. So and that made me popular because, you know, oh, look, Greg can get us beer, or Greg can get us peach schnapps or Barbells and James or whatever.
Did it feel normal? Pull your mic up a little bit closer. Did it feel normal to you when you were drinking with everybody else? Like, it, like, when did you feel like, did you ever feel like you had a problem, or was it just like everybody's doing it?
The problems really started about 24 or 25.
Yeah.
Yeah. Found out when I found myself drinking by myself, you know, at noon or for no reason, you know.
Yeah, I can remember going to the casino for the first time by myself. Because when I first went to Las Vegas, that's where I got, where I had my first experience, right, was in Las Vegas. That I went for my 21st birthday, you know, it's like rite of passage, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And when I got back and I was telling everybody, I was like, I had such the best time. And I had a great time in Las Vegas. You know, they have these things called poker rooms. And one of my buddies was like, they have a poker room down the street, dude. Well, I didn't know that because I hadn't been in a casino in St. Louis before. I had just turned 21. You know, it wasn't an advertised thing on the, you know, the TV or anything. And so I drove up there. And sure enough, it was just like... just like in Las Vegas, minus the cigarette smoke. And I can remember I sat down at a 3-6 table. Sharon Steele, shout out Sharon. She goes to church with me now.
Okay.
And
hey, Sharon, I know you.
She was my very first dealer I ever had here in St. Louis. Eventually, I ended up working with her. But yeah, that was when for me, it was like, oh, I'm by myself now. And that's when you sort of know that this is not a casual, this is not a social thing anymore. This is a something else. Now, at the time, you don't care. You're not thinking, I can't. I'm sick. I need help. No, you're like, this is fun. I don't need anybody else to do this. Forget them. Yeah. And it becomes a social thing. Connor, for you, what did it look like for you?
Well, my addiction started young. Drugs, drinking. You know, I was smoking pot 14, 15. By the time I graduated high school, I was a full-blown heroin addict. And
high school?
Yeah.
Heroin?
Yeah.
You were a young guy.
Yeah. Yeah, very young guy.
How do you get into hair? Because I was in high school. My kids, my friends did drugs. If they would have mentioned the word heroin, I would have like ran so fast in the other direction. Like, was it? It wasn't a scary thing for you at first?
No, it's it wasn't. It wasn't because I mean there wasn't a whole lot of you didn't hear a whole lot about the overdoses. You didn't really hear about it tearing apart lives. At least the school I grew up in, it was kind of shunned upon as far as with the other drugs were not as shunned upon.
Yeah,
but. You know, I picked it up and I loved it, you know, at the time. And yeah. I really just, you know, I ended up stopping shortly after high school, but it took a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And
just stop by yourself?
Yeah, well, I just switched.
Oh, you switched to something else?
I switched. I switched to alcohol and pain pills and a lot of Xanax.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then that happened for a while, man, and I just... In that motion till my early 20s, lost one of my best friends to suicide and, you know, really took off again back on heroin and, you know, and out of jails and out of prison.
Prison?
Prison, yes. Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's something I never got to experience. Connor, what happened that led to prison, man?
So I basically drugs is what landed me to prison. Yeah. All of my cases are drug related, and it just goes to show the track record of an addict. Whenever it breaks down to it, it's if I wasn't partying or getting high, I was getting in trouble because I needed to get high, and I didn't have the funds or the what have yous to do so.
So you're a kid, you're dealing with drug trouble and it's ending you in court. What, like, what's your family saying? What's going on in your world that's letting all this, you know?
You know, my families were my biggest supporters through this whole thing.
Yeah.
And,
that's good.
They definitely helped me out a lot. They had gotten me lawyers to try to get me out of trouble. I was able to stay away from prison, you know, for a little while, but I just kept messing up on probation and this and that. And I remember calling my family one time from jail. And, you know, my mom's like, you need to call your lawyer. So I call my lawyer. My lawyer says, it doesn't matter the amount of money that you spend, you're still going to prison. And,
Were you scared?
I was. I can't lie. I was. Yeah. I was.
I would have been.
Yeah.
So what happens, man? Tell me what it's like, because I don't know.
In prison?
Yeah, please.
In prison? Okay. Well,
let's scare some people straight here. You know what I'm saying? Like,
It's like a giant babysitting for adults.
Is it?
Babysitting for adults, yeah.
Kind of like a casino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The slot machines are a prison for some people.
Absolutely. There's a lot of gambling in prison, surprisingly.
I believe that.
That's where I started gambling at, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
For like cigarettes and stuff, like on the movies?
No. Yeah. I mean, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Sometimes there are cigarettes involved, but mainly like commissary, food, you know.
Okay.
Wire money, that sort of thing. But it's really just like a giant, a bunch of dudes around, a lot of testosterone flowing around. You know, it's just like a babysitting place, high school almost, a lot of drama.
See, now the movies and stuff, TV shows, Greg, like, I haven't been there. I'm just like, there's always fights, there's gangs, everything is a, like this hard place to be. It's a hard knock life, you know. And was it like that in your experience? Or
There is all that stuff. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. There is all that stuff, fighting. There are gangs there.
Yeah.
I didn't really have any trouble with anyone. I just, you know, kept to myself, you know, didn't get involved with any gangs, you know, just did my own thing, you know, kept my head down, mind my own business.
Yeah. Did you just get out recently when you got clean, or how did everything?
I was released from prison for my third trip to prison. I was released November 30th, 2022.
Yeah, so recently.
Yes.
And so do you withdraw in prison, or?
Absolutely. Usually it was county jail. This time it was prison, because I had a parole violation. So I was in county jail only a couple days, and I was withdrawing in prison. Yes.
What's that like?
Sucks.
Yeah.
Sucks. No Tylenol, just, you know, water in a mattress. Not even a mattress.
And this
cop.
Is from all like the Xanax and the painkillers and everything.
Everything. Yeah. You know, this time when I went, I was actually addicted to fentanyl too.
Oh, bro. See, now this is my ignorance. You guys are gonna be good supports here for me to learn some things, because I hung out at your support group the other day. We were talking about it earlier, and you guys were answering a lot of questions that I had. Fentanyl to me, it's like a new thing that I'm hearing about for the first time. It's not a world that I lived in, and now to me the word is so scary, because it's like all these overdoses, all these poisonings that are happening. It's killing everybody. It's synthetic. It's in everything. Mm-hmm. It's in stuff you can get. You can get it prescribed. It's stuff from the pharmacist, and it's in it. And it's like, what? I don't want that. I don't want that anywhere near. You know, my ibuprofen. Get that away. You know what I'm saying?
Cool.
So when did fentanyl get in the system here?
First time I ever seen it was about 2016. I think it was the first time I ever had a run-in with it, other than prescription fentanyl. But the first time I seen it on the streets was about 2016.
Yeah.
And it just progressed.
Is it something that you just buy? Like, how do you get it?
Yeah, so it's just like any other drug. So if you were to, like, it's just like you buy it from the dope man, you know.
It's like a pill. I don't know, because I'm ignorant, so like pretend like I don't know what I'm talking about here.
Well, it comes in like a powder, so like usually it's a powder form. But in St. Louis, where we're at, usually buy it in pills. Yes, how you purchase it. That's how they package it, I guess you would say.
Interesting. So do you like buy like 10 pills? Do you buy 100 pills? Like, how does that kind of stuff work?
Like, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
you don't have to say how many you bought. I'm just saying, like, what do people do in general?
I mean, you can buy one to as however long is your money.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Like, does somebody, like, a typical person, would they take like one pill? Is that enough? Or
one pill will get you off for sure.
For like how long?
Yeah, it's real short, like 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, it's a real short, short buzz.
So you got to keep getting the next pills, huh?
Yeah. Wow. Very, very addicting. Physical withdrawals, mental withdrawals.
And it was better than heroin? So, like, what was the incentive to do it?
It wasn't any more heroin. There wasn't. You know, and whenever it came to opiates, especially nowadays, your opiates are either pharmaceutical opiates, which, you know, is like the cream of the crop, I guess you would say, in the drug world. Or...
because you get it from a doctor and it's clean?
Yes. Yeah, you know what you're getting. Or it's fentanyl. You know, back in the day, there was heroin, and you know, it wasn't as bad. You didn't see as many people overdosing. You didn't see as many people dying from this substance. And fentanyl is just wiping people out left and right.
That is crazy. Did you have any familiarity with this, or was this something you learned about when you were...
The drug aspect I learned when I was in Texas.
Yeah.
And rehabs before that.
Yeah, so let's talk about Texas for a minute.
Okay.
So you guys went there in a long-term recovery program. Mm-hmm. You went for alcohol and you went for
drugs.
Yeah. And so it helps out people in different phases of addiction. Absolutely. Or different substances. Right. So how did you end up, tell us a little bit about the place and how you ended up there.
It was during that real cold stretch over this last year. I had left living with my girlfriend and I was living in a hotel for about a month. Pretty much I was eating Starburst and drinking vodka, and that was my calorie intake for the entire day.
Wow, Greg.
And so I realized, you know, I hit the low of the low, so I started searching around for some rehabs in the area. I called Harris House, I called Center Point, I called Gateway, and everything was, you know, it was cold. Mm-hmm. And the weather has a lot to do with the amount of people in rehab. And so what I put my name on the list, never got a call. And then I was trying to get myself off of the alcohol. There's a thing called delirium tremens, which is like a psychosis where you actually see and hear stuff.
Is this from drinking too much?
From coming off of drinking.
Oh, okay.
So from coming off of drinking, actually stopping alcohol, if you use a lot, can actually kill you. And so, really? And so can Xanax, but those are the two class of drugs that can actually kill you when you stop using them.
Okay. So you've been drinking since you were 13. Did you have periods of soberness, or was this?
Yeah. You know, when I was 13, you know, through high school, we'd drink on the weekends.
Yeah.
And then once I turned 21, probably until 2010, never went more than 3 or 4 days without, you know, some sort of alcohol.
Yeah.
Whether it just be a beer after work kind of a thing.
What happened in 2010?
2010, I actually went to my first rehab facility.
Okay, so you've been more than once.
Three rehabs and a actual mental institution.
All right. Well, I'm thankful to hear this, and I want anybody to catch this who's listening. Recovery is not an easy road.
No.
You know, and it looks different for everybody. Some people are one and done. Some people don't need it. Some people find Jesus, and it delivers them. Mm-hmm. Some people got to go 100 times and hopefully they make it out to be able to get to the 101st where they finally get rid of their demons, you know. So two or three times, like I said, you know, I tried to quit smoking. I was telling Connor off the air.
Mm-hmm.
I smoked for 15 years. I couldn't stop. Tried all the pills, all the nicotine gum, and they gave you something that gave you nightmares I tried this. nothing worked. A bunch of the people at the poker room did the acupuncture on the ears or whatever, you know, to try and quit smoking. None of it worked. Once I got born again, man, I was taking a walk, trying to get healthy, trying to lose some weight, and I was smoking my little cigarettes. And then guy was like, what are you doing? How are you going to get healthy doing that? And I was like, oh man, God, quit asking the right question, you know? And so I threw him in a dumpster right by 7-Eleven by my house, never smoked again. And that's the kind of stuff that you, like, when I talk about recovery, I talk about Jesus being a part of recovery. We can talk about that later, but deliverance is cool when it happens, because whether it's an overnight thing or a stage thing that happens, getting free of something is the coolest thing that happens to people. It makes them want to talk about it a lot. That's why you guys are doing recovery meetings now, because it's different when you're on the other side of being like, I'm free from that, finally.
Let me tell you about it.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly right. So what happened the first couple times you tried it?
I didn't actually work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous or any of the support groups.
Yeah,
actually,
were you going because somebody wanted you to go, or because you wanted to go?
Well, I went because somebody wanted me to go.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
Yeah,
when I was gambling so heavy, it was like, you know, I had to get a lot of help. Right, I need some money to bail me out to pay my rent or whatever it was, mm-hmm. and so it's like stipulations would come on, you know, the financial giftings that I would get. You know, the help I would get was like, okay, I'll give you this money if you go into rehab, if you go see a counselor, if you give me your debit card. I mean, I've been to rehab many times too. GA meetings, I've been to many of those. Most of the stuff that I did was one-on-one counseling sessions through like the bait 188 bets off. I'd call that number a million times in my life and would end up at free counselors that the state would provide. So I've done my fair share of trying to get clean and sober. But most of the time in my head, I was thinking, I don't really need this. If I could just win this jackpot, or if I could just win this poker tournament, these people are going to be jealous of me. They're not going to think that I'm this crazy loser who can't handle it no more. They're going to be like, I wish I had John's $100,000 poker tournament winnings, you know?
Right.
And so in my head, I wasn't really working it. I wasn't trying.
Exactly.
I was like, I was doing the, as most addicts, and you guys could probably attest to this, I was doing the thing I needed to do to be able to get to my next.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. For me, it was like, if I go to this counseling session, when I finally have money in the bank, I can go back up to the casino where right. I can, yeah, I can go where I need to go to get somewhere. Right. So you weren't working it.
No. And a big part of it is working the 12 steps. And a big part of the 12 steps is God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you did it this last time, though, you said you were in a hotel drinking, eating Starburst.
Starburst, drinking vodka.
Starburst and vodka. Were you putting the Starburst in the vodka?
Every now and then. Yeah.
Mix it up.
The vodka didn't last long enough for it to dissolve, though.
Yeah, but you had told me the story. Is this part of the same story where you fell and hit your head?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what happened when I was detoxing myself, hoping to find a rehab, because they won't take you unless you're detoxed.
Really?
No.
You got to be sober to get to rehab?
Yes.
Isn't that sort of defeat the point?
Yes.
The one we went to. Yes.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
So I woke up on the floor of the hotel bathroom in a huge pool of blood at probably about the size of this table in front of us.
That's so scary.
Don't remember anything. When you detox from alcohol too fast, you can have seizures. So when I got to the hospital, that's what they figured had happened. Ended up with stitches.
Who found you? You woke up?
I found myself. Yeah.
Found himself.
Yep. Found myself.
So you woke up and with all that blood loss, and what did you just call the 911?
I called Uber.
Uber?
Okay.
I called Uber.
Hey, I got $12. I need a ride to the hotel. I'm not going to mess with the back seat.
Right. I'm not bleeding.
Right. I had a huge towel on my chin. Ended up with 5 stitches. And
holy moly, Greg.
Yep.
I love that you called Uber. But.
I didn't want to drive myself.
Yeah, well, obviously, but not 911, Greg. Like, not the ambulance, not a...
That's a heftier bill.
I was going to say, that's too expensive. Like $12. Right. $200 or $900,
$9. What's the Uber guy say? He's like, huh? He's got to do a couple double takes, right?
Yeah. I don't think I was the first one he dropped off there ever, to be honest with you.
Oh, I gotcha. That hotel is not where you were staying at.
Right, yeah. Right.
Just a normal Tuesday for that Uber driver.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. So, what changes in your mind after that moment? Anything?
Luckily I was supposed to deal a poker tournament, that following weekend. And, you know, of course, what's the first thing you do when you get out of the hospital after you had 5 stitches because you fell after you were drinking? Well, you go get more alcohol.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
So was trying to wean myself, you know, down a little bit. And, I got the tournament I was supposed to deal at, I couldn't make it because, of course, I'm inebriated, and it was all the way in Arnold from Fairview Heights. And so I think God sent one of the other dealers over to talk to a friend of mine and said, hey, why don't you have Greg call this number if he can't get into a rehab? And then that's how I got that's how I got Art's number.
Yeah. So what was it like? Because Art, so for those who don't know, Connor, who is Art? Explain Art for us.
Art Dino is a... magical, wonderful person. Yeah. He has a center called, not a center, but a nonprofit called
ACPD.
ACPD.
We've talked about it already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he just helps people get out into recovery. Yeah. He helps people, you know, the indigent, the people struggling with money, or just anyone.
Yeah.
He helps them find a center to get their foot in the door of recovery and start working some steps.
Yeah. He lost his son to a fentanyl overdose.
Yes.
His son was 19. But man, when I hear him talk to people for the first time, he is, I mean, a beacon of hope.
Oh yeah.
For someone who has gotten out and free from their addiction, when you hear somebody who really believes that you can get help, that's a big deal.
Because
a lot of times, like especially like your family and stuff, they've seen you trip and fall so many times that it's like the boy who cried wolf a lot. You know, they don't really believe that this is the time and this is the chance. But someone like Art, what was it like for you talking to Art for the first time? Was he encouraging? Did you have that same experience?
Yeah. I had talked to him on the phone and told him my situation. And he said, I can get you help. He goes, when are you ready to go? And I said, now. And this was a Sunday morning after he had got out of church. And he goes, all right, how about we get you on a plane tomorrow? And
I love it.
He works fast.
So here I had been in the hotel for a couple of weeks trying to find a place and never did get a call back from any of them.
Yeah.
And I call this man and he's got me on a plane in 24 hours.
Yeah.
And so I, on the way to the airport, I had stopped and met him for the first time because I had to pay my money for the rehab. And, you know, I walked in, I talked to him, we signed all the paperwork, and on the way out, he gives me a big hug and he looks me right in the eye and says, "I love you." And I mean, it was just, it was, he meant it, yeah. You know? So that was, I knew I was in the right place.
Yeah.
At that point.
His place has the love of God on it. He talks about, he's helped 4,600 people, to lose your son and then go on to do the Lord's work. The guy loves the Lord like crazy. And you know that he's serving God through all this stuff. But the program that he sent you to is not no shallow rehab, show up on Saturdays and go do your life 5 days a week. You signed up the next day to be something for 6 months, right?
I was there for 90 days.
90 days. Okay. Mm-hmm. So 3 months.
Yes.
3 month program. That's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For anybody who hasn't been to rehab or like, for me, like I never went to anything that was overnight. So for me, it's hard to fathom like giving up your job, giving up your, you know, not just your drug of choice or whatever it was, you know, like giving up your life for a period of time to recognize that you have an addiction that you need help with. Yeah. What was it like for you?
Well, after being the low of the low, waking up on the bathroom floor like that, I knew that was, it was that, it was either commit fully or die.
Okay.
You know, there was nothing in between.
Was this the first time, because you said you hadn't really worked it before, was this the first time you're like, I'm going to do it? Or was it?
Yeah. It was the first time that I really went because I really wanted to go and that somebody didn't kind of push me in that direction.
Yeah. Similarly, when I woke up at 29 years old, I woke, this led me on my life to the Lord, Connor, is that I woke up 29 years old. I lost $500,000 and I remembered all the dreams that I had growing up. You know, I wanted to be a pro wrestler. I wanted to be a rock star. I wanted to do all these things. And I woke up at 29. I was like, I'm about to turn 30. I was like, I haven't done none of this stuff. And all I have is this just like trail of nonsense behind me. And I was just like, I was so depressed by it. I mean, I was already depressed because I was in the middle of addiction, you know, already suicidal from crazy thoughts that you have in the middle of addiction. But I finally was just like, maybe it's my gambling problem that is my problem from like having a better future, right? And so it was the first time that I had called up somebody for help saying, I need help. Not, I have to get help so that I can, you know, pay my rent this month. I need help. I think I'm finally the problem and I'm ready to work it out. And I did. I did a program for 90 days, not in-house, but I did a program for 90 days. Okay. And I did 90 days sober. And after each 30 days, they'd give you a little coin or whatever, you know, and way to go, John. You did such a great job, man. We're so proud of you. And that was so amazing to me. Because as an adult who had just messed up his whole adult life and had everybody tell him he's a loser and you're not going to amount to nothing. Why don't you just stop? Why don't you just stop? How many times you guys hear this, right?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you just stop it? And for me to hear someone say, we're proud of you.
Right.
That was a big deal for me. I hadn't heard that as an adult. You know, you hear it a lot as a kid, like, great way to draw like, something on a piece of paper with some crayons. Good job, you know, Johnny. But this was the first time as an adult. And so, like, I really craved that attention. And so I was able to stay sober for 60 days and for 90 days, like, feeding off of that just, like, proudness of these people, you know, being proud of me. But at the end of the 90 days, he goes, hey, we're not going to do another one of these celebrations until a year. That's how the program works. So now we'll celebrate every annually. And I was like, no, man. I was like, I sort of need this. You know, I was like, what do you mean 1 year? I was like, and here's the thing that happened to me. And you guys can tell me if you've had experiences like this. We had done a lot of stuff. He's like, you know, we say the serenity prayer all the time. And he was trying to get me into like a 12-step type of mentality, you know, and getting on God. I wasn't there yet. And I was just trying to get help. And I asked him, I said, the whole 90 days I was clean. I was clean because I was seeking some sort of honor and praise, you know. But at no point did I actually, the desire to stop gambling ever go away. In my mind, it was like, go gamble, go gamble, go gamble, go gamble, you know. And so what I did was like, I locked myself in my apartment. I either went to work or I ate as much McDonald's as I could, you know, go and eat and like crash my body to sleep, you know, and I'd sleep as much as I could or... You know, I did nothing else. I smoked a lot, but I smoked in that 90 days probably triple the amount of cigarettes that I had smoked previously at any point in my life. I mean, just that's was my whole life is like do anything to not gamble.
Absolutely.
Do anything. It's like every thought in my head was gamble, 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 gamble. And the only time I could get any peace was sleep. You know?
Absolutely. I do know that feeling.
Yeah. And so when I finally was in this conversation with this guy and I was like, why hasn't rehab fixed me? Because that's why I went, right? That's I was in these in these sessions trying to be like, why am I not fixed? This is supposed to fix me. I'm here. I'm clean. Now you're telling me I'm not going to get any honor anymore, so I don't really have a reason to stay clean. And it really frustrated me. I was really upset. And he said something to me that I think changed my life forever, because it led me on a path to Jesus. He said, "You don't get fixed. Mm. You don't get fixed." And I was like, "You don't get fixed? What's the point?" Like, I was so distraught. He's like, you learn to live 15 minutes at a time. And that was the most depressing thing that I had ever heard. No. I was like, I would rather gamble and deal with the consequences
right.
than to live a life where all I think about is gambling for 15 minutes. And I try to like figure out a way to not do it. Like I couldn't see myself living that way, you know? And so I walk out of the place, like before I'm even out the door, I'm calling my bookie like, "Hey, let's put some money on the, you know, on the thing." And all of a sudden, you know, I go on this 8-day bender. I've gambled everything since I had my 401k, it's gone. Everything that wasn't bolted down in the apartment, it's gone. You know, everything's out the door. I got just a couch and me and this little TV. And the Jets, it was the Giants and the Cowboys played a Monday night game. That was my last bet that I played before I got born again. And I lost it. And I was just like, "Man, what have I done with my life, man?" And I was suicidal, Connor, you know.
Yeah.
And
oh,
so
yeah.
I heard that I was like, maybe I'll just pray. You know, and I hadn't really prayed before, you know. I mean, as a kid, like I went to this little Baptist church with my grandma and stuff, but I didn't really know the Lord. The only other time I remember praying to God was the night before my dad died. I prayed for a night off school, and the next day I woke up and my dad was dead, and I got a whole week off school. And so I sort of blamed God for my dad dying. And so I sort of didn't have a relationship with God anymore. But here I was like, "All right, God, if you're real." You know, how many times do you guys do this, like, you know, like bargaining with God conversation? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Just help me out of this one court date.
That's right. Yeah, exactly right. That's how I was doing. I was like, "God, if you're real, you know, I need you to show me a future and a hope for my life because I don't see one anymore." And the craziest thing happened. I heard this voice in my head. I don't know. I didn't know it was God at the time. I just thought I was going crazy because I was finally hearing things. "The kingdom of heaven is upon you. The kingdom of heaven is upon you. The kingdom is..." Finally, I'm not hearing gamble anymore. I'm hearing something else. But I had never heard that term before. Wasn't familiar with that. And so I thought I was hearing voices. I ran out to, you know, the room in my other apartment. The only thing I had left at the house was this Bible my dad had given me. My dad, when he died, you know, one of the things they gave me of his was his Bible. Now, my dad never talked to me about Jesus. He never preached the gospel to me. He never, you know, but I opened up this Bible for the first time. I see he's got his handwritings in the margins, and he's like, he must have, at least at some point, opened this up and studied it, you know. But anyway, so I open up the New Testament, and I don't know what to read in the Bible. I don't know nothing about it. So I'm flipping to the New Testament because I knew that Jesus was in the New Testament. And I'm reading the first page of Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, right? And I get down to chapter 3, and it says, "The kingdom of heaven is upon you." And I felt this like warm blanket. I don't know if you guys have experienced the Holy Spirit before, but it's pretty awesome. It's pretty amazing. And so you feel this warm blanket, and I just like, in this moment, I'm looking at this Bible, and I'm reading, I'm like, I just stopped in my tracks. Oh my gosh, God is real. He's talking to me. And I was so overwhelmed, like with emotion, and like, I didn't know what to think. So I just kept reading, right? And so I'm reading that Jesus died on the cross for me, and you know, and if you just forget, you know, ask for forgiveness of your sins and all that stuff. And I'm having this exact opposite experience that I had thought the Bible was, because if you would have asked me 10 minutes before this happened, what is the Bible? I would have said, it's a book for old people.
Mm-hmm.
The stories are, you know, names you can't pronounce, he's and yous and thous and all this stuff. And like, it's not for us today, you know, and it's a book of made up stuff and all this, you know, I had all these reasons to not appreciate it. But in the moment I was experiencing a completely different thing. The words were jumping into my heart, you know, and I was like experiencing them. And so I just remember just like breaking down and be like, God, oh God. Like I'm talking to him for the first time, right? Like, Jesus, you know, I've messed up, man. I don't know what I do with my life. I've ruined it, you know, all this gambling, all this stuff. And I start confessing everything. Oh, Lord, I've done this and I've done this. I don't even know what I'm doing. I got no one there to coach me. Like, you know, this is a legitimate, like, God encounter where I'm just, like, pouring my heart out to him on this thing. And he's, I just felt this peace and this weight just come off my shoulders. And I just knew at that moment that everything was going to be all right. I didn't know how it was going to be all right. I didn't stop gambling for 6 months after that. I didn't get delivered from gambling right away. But I just had hope. Yeah, I had hope for the first time, you know? Mm-hmm. And hope, and that's what the Bible says. When you put your trust in Jesus, hope shows up. And I had never experienced hope before. I'd gone to a lot of rehab. I had wanted it to work, you know? But I didn't have hope for it to work. I wasn't like, you know? And so, like, when you find peace and hope in your life, it is a different experience. And I think those are the things that really help people find recovery. It did for me, you know, just having something to wake up for. Is like, I would just read the Bible every day. You know, in fact, I just read the book of Matthew for like the first 30 days. I was like, this book's enough. Like, I don't need the rest of this Bible. These first couple pages doing good for me, you know? And so, but he delivered me of, you know, my bad language and my smoking, and eventually my drinking, and then my gambling. And that stuff is crazy to just drop off your, like, for you guys know how hard is it to just get rid of all this stuff?
It's so hard. So hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
For it to just fall off like that. It's such a good feeling. You know, once you get that spirit in you, you know,
yeah.
It's a whole different ball game, man.
Yeah. So anybody who is out there and is looking for answers, looking for hope, I would encourage you to ask Jesus or ask God. You know, so when you guys were in rehab at the 3-month facility, is this part of their program? Or was it something else based?
So it's a 12-step based program.
Yeah.
Where they come out of the Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
Book is a lot of it. There was some smart recovery there also. You know, the medical science behind recovery and addiction was there. But where the real work came from is through a 12-step program. And in a 12-step program, you need to have a higher power, God, as you will. And, you know, before I came down to this program, I was in prison, and you know, I didn't know what else to do, man. You know, I was stressing over a date. When am I gonna get out of prison?
Yeah.
You know, and I already somewhat had it made up in my mind that I'm gonna change my life. And my cellie at the time told me to pray. You know, and I prayed, and I was like, you know, something simple. I ain't prayed in years, except for, you know, please let not be the cops.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I remember praying, God, let this bet get there. You know, hey, just
let the Jets get you over. Yeah.
That's right, exactly right. You know?
Yeah. So, I prayed, man. And I was like, just God, if you got a way for me, man, show me, you know, I think I even started with just like, bro, you know, like I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to practice prayer. But man, my prayer was answered. The next day, I had a Bible appear outside of my cell, addressed to someone else, you know, in the prison. So it wasn't a Bible addressing my name, and it showed up. And it took me a couple hours to realize the signs there. And I'm stressing. I got into a little wreck outside the cell, and taking care of that. And my cellie the whole time's like, man, you prayed last night. Because I told, you know, you talked to your cellie about everything.
Yeah.
I told him what I prayed for, you know, all that. And he said, you prayed last night, and then this Bible appears, and you didn't even take that as a sign. And, and that night, I cracked that Bible open, man, and started reading it. And we had tablets in there. I was, you know, Stephen Furtick.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I started watching his sermons and just really, like, diving in, man, because that was God answering my prayer.
Yeah, that's really cool. What was it like? So I'm interested to hear what it's like for somebody who's reading the Bible for the first time. What was your experience with it?
Oh, man, it's a trip, man. It's cool. It's cool because I was the same way as you whenever I looked at the Bible. I grew up Methodist.
Okay.
I never really read it. And anytime I did try to pick it up or whatever, it wouldn't make sense. And, you know, I started in the New Testament as well. And, I'm going through Matthew, and I'm like, man, it's making sense.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, someone's talking to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, you know, and after I dug in deeper, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, you know, I started really getting in there. I started realizing that, you know, this is a way to live. This is a way to better yourself. You know, it's going to help me battle my addiction. It's going to help me in all aspects of my life. It's going to help me, you know, maintain my anger. It's going to help me maintain responsibility. It's going to help me maintain discipline.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just dove in and really started dissecting it.
Yeah. So I don't want you to be offended by what I'm about to say, because it's not about you. So I watched this documentary about these guys who had drug problems, mm-hmm. and a lot of them went to jail, and they would open up their Bibles and they call it Jailhouse Saved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Are you familiar with this term?
Or absolutely.
I don't know if that's the correct what they call it in there or not, but that's what I heard on this documentary. And they're like, yeah, you'll get different, you know, after you get out once you're free. I've seen you free, man. You're free now, mm-hmm. and I still see you chasing after Jesus, man.
Absolutely.
So a little different, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and you do see that a lot. You know, when they're in there, you know, they get locked up. Now they're in prison, they're in jail, whatever. Boom, they're in the Bible, they're holding Bible studies and this and that. But as soon as their feet touch the bricks, they're back to their old stuff.
Yeah.
And it, you know.
it's easy to fall back in your old life.
It's so easy.
I think it's because you don't have a future, right? So, like, you don't know what your future is, right? Like, you have a future, obviously. But, like, God has a plan and a purpose for all of us, right? So, if we haven't discovered that or haven't looked into it, I think that makes it incredibly difficult to run from your past addictions. Because I personally think that the greatest way to get free of whatever the demon is that you're chasing or that's chasing you is to have a future to run towards. Because then you don't want to look back. You don't want to go back to where you were, where you've been, or what you're doing, because now you're like, oh my gosh, this is way mm-hmm. better. Even the idea of it is way better than, you know, the experience of what I used to be doing. And so that's when God called me into ministry, and I was like, I'm going to chase this, and mm-hmm. I don't know what it looks like, and 10 years later I'm still doing it, but having something to go towards. And so, man, I'm really interested in Greg's story, though, because I haven't heard much of, like, because I've heard him say that Jesus showed up, and like, and for you, it was a little different.
Yeah, so it kind of started right when I got down to Texas. They had said, hey, Art had told me, hey, look up this guy named Connor when you get down there. I'm like, okay. So I walk in, they're introducing me to everybody at the house, and here's this guy sitting at the table playing solitaire. And I said, hey, I'm Greg.
Fill me in.
I said, I'm Greg. He goes, I'm Connor. I'm like, oh, hey, man, nice to meet you. Art told me to look you up. And so he was actually my roommate. Well, it was the wrong Connor.
Oh.
I didn't know that this Connor, that there was another Connor. So I'm in my room trying to get everything together for that first night. And the house manager comes up and says, hey, you need to pack your things. You're moving. And I'm like, did I do something wrong? Oh, you know, yeah. Kind of a thing. So they moved me to a different room, a much better room. And Connor here was there. Mm-hmm. And
the real Connor.
The real Connor. Real Connor.
Well, the real Connor. And please stand up.
So we kind of looked at each other and we were like, man, you look familiar. So we started talking, you know, typical, did you play poker? Did you work in the pizza business? Kind of a thing. And then we come to find out. That, and Art did not know this. When Art made sure that we were in the same room, but Art did not know this. We had been in rehab together before.
2016.
For real?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yep. We go back like Cadillacs. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we knew each other from rehab. We didn't stay in touch after that, but.
And it obviously didn't pan out as either of you would have wanted.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But that was the first sign that I should have, you know, that God was working.
That's
but I
crazy.
didn't catch on, you know.
Yeah,
hard headed.
God was with both of you. Like he's like, come on, guys, come on, guys, yeah. come on, guys. You guys are like, no, God, we got this.
We got this.
No. We'll figure this out for you.
Right. Yep.
Oh, it's a good thing the Bible says God redeems lost time, and I believe this about anybody. So anybody who's like, oh, it's too late for me, and say, you know, I've already messed up or whatever. I'm 6 years old. I'm still addicted. Guess what? God redeems lost time. So I feel like. Whenever you finally get on the Jesus boat, when you get on the God boat, and you're, you know, you find salvation and you're ready to say, God, what's my plan? He's going to say, well, this was my plan for your 100 years or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But you didn't find me till 60, so I got to just speed it up a little bit, you know? Yeah. So I feel like there's extra blessings and extra fun that gets to come in that little short amount of time because you get to experience, you know, the fullness of what God has for you in a shorter amount of time. So I think that there's a little bit of blessing in that, you know, as opposed to like you start when you're 5 years old and you get to get all the same stuff, but it's spread out over, you know, less birthdays, you know,
yeah,
right. You know
what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It makes sense.
Absolutely. And now me and Greg are linked up like a Gucci belt now.
I mean, right. I like it.
Yeah, we're, you know, this is like my best friend. You
That's
know?
Amazing.
And it's crazy. We met in rehab, you know,
yeah.
And then met again.
Twice. Yeah.
In rehab. Twice. Yeah.
So you guys are in there. And so walk me through like a typical day.
In the rehab in Texas?
Yeah.
If you weren't up by 7 o'clock, the house manager would come around, wake you up. You had to be downstairs and ready for a meditation in the morning by 7:40.
Is this like prayer?
Yeah.
Or do they just call it meditation?
It's like a guided meditation off YouTube. You know, I use the time to read the Bible.
Okay.
Actually. But yeah. It was a guided meditation.
Okay, gotcha.
And after that, you were kind of free to make breakfast when you were in the house. Everything was, you know, the food was there for you, but nothing was prepared for you like other rehabs do. This was more of a sober living.
Sober, yeah. It's like just a bunch of guys living in the house and a bunch of girls living in the house, and then they meet together and do recovery work.
Separate houses.
Yeah.
Separate,
okay, gotcha.
Live in separate houses, but gotcha. The meeting was at this. They would come every day. They'd get there about 9:30 in the morning.
Okay.
And then we'd start our first meeting at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
Meeting from 10 to 11. Break for lunch from
what's a meeting, so like a like somebody facilitates it, you guys, like, is it like a you know,
it's like a meeting? A lot of it's 12-step. We had a lot of big book studies, and then also they would have speakers come in. John Lee would come in, great guy, wrote some good books, you know. And then or we'd have people come in and speak and just, you know, share a message of recovery, hope and strength.
Yeah. Okay. Was that helpful for you guys, like when you first got there? Is that stuff you want to hear? Like, I don't know, like, you feel like it's a
For me personally, I did this time. I was actually clean. I had been clean for a month or so whenever I got down there, and I was just ready to get the tools back. So I'm soaking up everything I can in this aspect. But yeah, I mean, I know personally I was.
Yeah.
Whenever I came to diving in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got a message, you eat lunch, and then?
Another meeting from 12 to 1.
Yes.
Another break from 1 till... whenever.
Yeah.
Usually about 2:30, if we were going to the gym that day, we went to the Y 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were, we'd get on the bus at 2 o'clock.
I feel
so.
Like you'd sign up for everything, right? You're down there, you're like, I got nothing else to do. You're like, what?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And, that's kind of what's my thing too. I dove right into it.
Yeah.
And you know, the other rehabs, I'm like, all right, one day gone. Oh yeah. I got 27 more days of this here. Mm-hmm. I was like, one day gone, I've only got 89 left.
Yes.
What can I make, you know?
Oh, that's so good.
Two gone.
That's so what good.
I've only got 88 left. Yeah.
Yeah. So you instantly felt that sense that like something's about to change, like it's changing.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. That's so strong.
It's not a clinical setting. You know, it's not a clean, sterile environment per se, hospital kind of setting.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding you, in the first 2 or 3 days I was there, I heard more grown men tell each other that they love them.
Oh, wow.
And mean it. Mm. And mean it, than I had in my entire life.
Wow. How do you react to that kind of stuff?
It's a beautiful thing, yeah, man. I mean, yeah. It's like, at first you're just like, yo, you're faking, you know?
Oh, but, yeah.
And then like, once you get to know these guys, you know, like Sal, Boz, everyone down there, the techs there, you know, we got real close with them, and they're like, I love you. And it was like the first day I was there, I'm walking up the stairs to go to bed, and dude's like, all right, good night, I love you. And I was like, you know, I love you too, bro, I appreciate that, you know. And you could just hear the sincerity.
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of church, you know, like, yeah, love you, brother. You know, a lot of hugs of people you just met and this kind, yep, of thing, you know.
Yep.
The community is really welcoming.
Yeah.
Right. And so it makes you feel, it probably opens you up to want to share a little faster, you know, to, receive a little faster, I imagine, because it's not, I don't know how, I mean, listen, we've already shared, like, when I entered these kinds of situations where I'm in a rehab or a counseling session or something, my heart's not really receptive to it. So it sounds like it may be being in this situation where you're, I don't want to say the word stuck, but you're not going nowhere for 90 days, you know, and, but you're getting, you know, love bombs for a phrase, you know, and you're hopeful.
Right. Now, we could have gone somewhere. You could walk out the front door at any time.
Oh, you can leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like Centerpoint or wherever where they literally lock the door and you
leave
can't
and come back, or just leave and you're,
no,
you don't
you
come
leave,
back.
You're gone.
Yeah. Oh, I got you. Could have walked out at any given time.
Okay. So no one's forcing you to stay there, but you're working it out. So how long does it take before you feel like something shifted in your, or did you feel that way?
It took me a little while. The steps, which I said earlier, there's 12 steps. It only mentions alcohol one time. It alludes to God 7 times in those steps. And one of the big things in recovery is having a spiritual experience.
Mm, okay.
And, you know, so I'm waiting for the bush to start burning.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
Yes.
I'm waiting for a deer to walk through the front yard, you know, something like that. And nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm kind of getting discouraged. This is maybe a month in, and I had dropped my alcoholic, they call it the big book, but it's the AA book, and it had fallen on the ground, and I picked it up, and it was on page, I think it's 567, which says spiritual experience, and it kind of explained what a spiritual experience is. And I'm like, I think I just had my spiritual experience reading about a spiritual experience.
I love that.
And so that's when it really changed for me.
Yeah. So previously, what was your history with any sort of religion or spiritual experience? To use your phrase here.
I absolutely despised organized religion.
Yeah.
You know, I just did. My mom was very spiritual. She was not, real religious. But, kind of like every other addict, the foxhole prayers were never answered. So yeah.
The jets to cover it.
Yeah. Right.
Those prayers.
Right. Yeah. Nothing was ever answered, because I was asking for stuff for me.
Yeah.
I need this new car.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff, rather than I need to go to bed and be able to sleep without having to take medicine. I need peace,
It's so funny that you say that, though, because a little inside baseball here. The first time I ever spoke for Testimony House, I called this little tiny church in St. Charles. And I invited, it was my wife there and her parents. Like, the first time, I'd been married for, I don't even know if I was married at this point. But we were newlyweds, if anything. And my buddy Kevin was there. And then this little church, they probably had 10 members. It wasn't a very big church, Connor. And then Greg Beyer shows up, this guy I work with. We're not like great friends. We're not enemies. We're not like,
we're coworkers.
Yeah, we hang out occasionally as a group and things like that. But for you to show up that day, man, what a big encouragement that was for me. And for you to sit here and be like, I sort of despised it. Why did you even show up, man? And you brought your mom.
And I brought my mom, yeah. I don't know. Something spoke to me and said, hey, this guy, I was very lost at that point in time in my life.
Yeah.
That was pretty much right before I went to my first rehab and
you're looking for answers.
Looking for answers.
Yeah. And you continued and it sounds like you're.
And that's how I was raised, that if somebody, invites you to something or has something, you go and support your friends and family.
Yeah, well, that's so sweet, man. That's always been an encouragement. I tell that story a lot. I'm like, but Greg was there.
Greg was there.
You don't even know. And so I'm gonna pull on this thread a little bit more. So you were there. You and me worked at this casino together for many years. So you knew there's not a lot of people in my life, and I like to talk to them when I get the opportunity. Because I tell my stories all the time, right? I've already shared them tonight. This is what I used to look like my whole life, and here's what I look like now that the Christ has shown up. But there's a lot of people in my life, Greg, who don't understand. When I tell stories about being at the casino until 6 in the morning or working a midnight to 8 shift for 5 years, they're like, right. Or being like, hey, I used to drink all the time. I was just drunk and I would smoke a bunch of cigarettes and I would, gamble my rent money away and I drive to Tunica and gamble your rent money away.
Absolutely.
And my other friends' mint money away. And my mom's rent money away. And I stole and I borrowed and I steal some more to fund this addiction. And to have someone who saw me then, and then got to see a transformation. It's hard. I think when you talk about jailhouse saved, someone who has had a legitimate experience that has transformed their life, it's hard to change your life around, especially when you're struggling, And so when people see that, I don't know what people think, but it's typically not like good for you for some reason. I'll believe it when I see it. I remember people at the casino being like, oh, if John's still a Christian in a year, I'll be a Christian. Three of my friends said that. And I was like, come on now, where are you? Where you guys at? Come on over.
The joke was, how long till we see John on TV because he was embezzling money? Because this can't be real.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So So we're doing this movie about sports gambling, and do you remember seeing anything or experiencing anything in the casino or with me in particular, with me gambling or gambling in general, that was different than the type of person that I am today? I'm curious.
The fantasy football or the fantasy. Yeah, I guess it was baseball league. Fantasy baseball league.
We're in a fantasy baseball league together. Yeah.
And you were the commissioner, and the recaps at the end of each week were, we all waited for the recaps because we wanted to see how John roasted everybody in the, the league. And I remember thinking, I'm like, man, if this guy would ever take this ability and use it for good, because it was, I wish I still had some of them.
Oh, I do too. So I would do a whole synopsis of I would make fun of Greg and the players on his team and make fun of why his team lost this week is because he's a loser, but also because Joey Votto is a loser. I would tie all these threads together and realize that I had a gift for writing. Obviously, now that I've written books, you realize that God puts gifts inside of you. You don't realize what their purpose is until you meet God, until you find Jesus, right? So I was using these gifts to do that. So it's so funny to me. You know why I wanted to be the commissioner of that league? Can you guess why?
So that you could do that?
So that I could get the money.
Oh, okay.
I gambled all your guys' money away.
Okay. I didn't win anything.
Yeah, but that's why I did it. I've never told that story out loud. I positioned myself to be the commissioner every year because I knew it would be a big influx of cash in my pocket.
Temporary loan
I would use to gamble, and I'd be like, well, I've got the entire baseball season to make it back if I can't win it back, and then I would pay you guys back at the end of the year or whatever, you know. Right. So, but that was the reason I was doing all that. And so, like, to go from that.
Right.
It's so funny to me. Was there anything? So you've seen me transform. Have you seen anybody else though? I mean, it's like, I feel like it's rare. It's too rare.
It is rare. Unfortunately, you know, everyone doesn't make it. It doesn't click for everybody.
Yeah.
And with the recovery situation, it might click. You can never give up on anyone because this is my fourth try at this.
Yeah.
You know, and,
how do you feel it's going for you this time?
Well, I'm doing the right things this time. Yeah. I finally surrendered. I finally started listening to people. You know, I realized I'm not the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
And started taking some direction, and it's going good.
Yeah. Which of those things that you just mentioned, is there one that was like a key point for you, a turning point, or anything that, like, besides your book and your opening, your spiritual awakening moment, but like, is there someone or something that happened that really has helped you?
Yeah, it's God. You know, knowing that there's somebody out there looking out for me and trying to help, you know, even if I am not smart enough to catch it every time, you know.
So have you had your Bible opening experience? Have you been trying to read it at all?
Yeah, actually, Connor, we started with that. We started with Matthew when we were down in
down
in rehab. Yeah.
Well, look at the book of Matthew getting all the press here today.
I had been big into reading my Bible as soon as I really dove into it. And when Greg got down there, I was like, man, I want to start a Bible study.
Yeah.
And the Bible study was me and Greg.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
You know, there's like 8-10 guys in the house, but the Bible study was me and Greg. And, you know, and we did every night, or once a week, probably, at least. We was in the Bible, you know, sitting down, really diving in. It was a beautiful thing, man.
That's really cool. And so none of the other guys got jealous and wanted to join the group or nothing, huh?
We had some stragglers here and there, but you know, they were just trying to poke holes.
Exactly. Yeah. They were there.
Really? A lot of it. So they were on like your guys' second and third trip, but you guys were like, look, we're veterans here.
Yeah.
We're making it out this time. We're not coming back here.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And you know, we had a different outlook on the whole thing. I mean, there was a lot of that through the whole experience. It's just whenever me and Greg were there, I mean, we're like, we're here for recovery. We're not here to, you know, dodge a court case or any of that. You know?
And that's what a lot of people were there for, because their mom wanted them to be. If you want a place to live, you have to do this and that kind of thing.
It's so similar. Mm-hmm. It's so crazy to me that it doesn't matter what your substance was or what your addiction was, how similar the experiences of like your behavior was.
It's crazy.
How you compartmentalize your life. You hide friends from one another so that you know, they don't know what you've been up to. Right.
Yeah.
That's
why
I used to feel, you know?
Absolutely.
I remember the first time you shared your story up there at our meeting, you know, and I was like, this dude gambled, you know, the way I did drugs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's crazy. Yeah. I was the same thing. Like you said, you was gambling your rent money, their rent money. You know, I was gambling my car note, your car note, you know, and then taking your car, you know, and it's a crazy thing that addiction, no matter what form, it can destroy your life.
Yeah. The first time I ever heard a testimony like that was in the midst of my addiction. Was Josh Hamilton. He was on a show, I don't know if you guys remember, Real Sports, Brian Gumbel, you know, was on for a long time. And so they did this episode, this was, I don't know, early 2000s, maybe late, it had to have been the early 2000s. I'm in the midst of my addiction, I'm on the couch, this episode comes on, and Josh Hamilton has not made his way back to the major leagues. I don't know if you know the story or not, but he was a number one draft pick by the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, and then they sent him down to camp. He's in the tattoo shop with some of his buddies, and somebody brings out some cocaine. He ends up getting hooked on it. He got a $3 million signing bonus, blew it all on drugs, and doesn't make it to the major leagues. Okay?
Oh, wow.
And so he's basically, in this episode of Real Sports, he is like, he's mowing yards. He's like, he's like talking about how he got clean. And it's like, he's got kids now. And the story is like, you know, bad luck loser, basically, you know, like, the story is like, look at what happened to this poor schmuck. You know, he had the world in his arms or whatever, and they're interviewing him in this show, and he's expressing the things that we all know. I was just hopeless every day. I couldn't get the war out of my head to stop. You know, I stole from my grandma, and it, like everything he said, I was like, I've done that.
Yeah,
I feel that way.
Checked out.
I was like, and it was the first time that I'd like heard somebody talk about getting out of it, and it was so inspirational to me. Like I knew in my heart that I was like an addict, but I hadn't like obviously gotten free yet, and it would be another 6 years before I get free from that. But his story stuck with me so much. He was talking about how Jesus got him saved and set free. I left that part out of it. That part, the only thing I took out of it was that you got free. And so I know if this guy can do it, I might be able to do it. And so eventually he ends up in the major leagues. He becomes an MVP. He signs a $125 million contract with the Angels. He goes to the World Series twice. Like has this amazing home run derby 1 year. Like this amazing, incredible story, you know. And it's just, and I get to ride that. We went to Texas, saw him inducted to the Hall of Fame. I got his bobbleheads. My dog's name Hamilton. Like I've been following this guy for a long. Like his story is so encouraging to me. It was the first testimony. And so now when I hear people's testimony, that was the first of many that I've heard now. You know, just you two or two more tonight. Is it's just like, when God shows up, everything can change in somebody's life. And it's worth saying every day, because you guys know, I know what it's like to be desperate, bloody, bruised, in jail, work, you know, not knowing what's going to happen the next day, knowing, but it's not going to look great unless I fix something, you know? Right. And it's not really something we can fix, because we have to give up our way of doing things. And that's hard for people.
Oh, yeah. It's getting out of that self-will, man. Whenever I talk recovery, you know, a lot to people, it's, a recovery or addiction is a self-will run, you know, mess, basically, that you're trying to control, fix, and manage everything in your life. So whenever it came to me getting into recovery and staying clean, you know, I had to get out of self-will, and I had to get in God's will. Yeah. You know, I do a lot of praying on that, you know. Yeah. Got to get rid of my character defects and my fears, you know, really to change.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's cool because I never thought I would look forward to waking up every day to go, you know, be a carpenter.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy, right. Yeah. I'm like, you know, driving an hour to work, you know, at 4:30 in the morning, driving an hour to work. And I'm like, man, this ain't too bad.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And then I love it.
Finding a new life, because that's what we call it. So there's, I don't know if you remember, Greg. So Justin Willenbrink, who used to work with us at the...
Just had a baby, right?
Yeah. So, well, he just had an anniversary.
Willenbrink, yeah. I think for the other Justin.
Yeah. So, I'd worked with him at Ameristar for years, you know, before we got to River City. And so we get to River City, they knew. So I had this history, Connor, of being like the sort of shut up and deal poker dealer, you know. I would have a sort of a grimace on my face, you know, all the time. And, you know, I took it as a sport of pride, really, you know, like the poker dealers appreciated a dealer who would shut up and deal, who wouldn't like talk to you a whole lot. And, you know, it was more about making sure the game was right and this kind of thing. And so, but work was like, you got to smile, you got to jump, you know, you got to be a magician on the stage. They were told us once, you know, and so like, I was really bad at this. Right. So, I sort of had, you know, this reputation as having the sour face. Right. And so after I got born again, I'm still working at the casino, working with Greg, working with Justin, but my life had changed and I'd started, you know, experiencing things, but I didn't realize it, that it had outwardly started to show. And so Justin kept seeing me. He's like, John, you keep smiling a lot. You know, you keep smiling a lot. He's like, I'm not used to seeing this, you know? And I was like, I am? Like, I didn't even recognize that just having a smile on my face was so much different, you know, than just knowing that I had lost $300 in the game I was watching while I was dealing cards. <you know? laughs> And so he started calling me the new John Simmons. He's like, hey, new John Simmons here, everybody. That's how I got the name of the show. It's not because it's the new show. It's because I became a new person in Christ. 2 Corinthians 5:17, you become a new creation. And I know that that's what happens when I hear stories like you. Like, you become
a new person.
It feels just different. I can be excited about driving to my carpenter job for an hour. Absolutely. I can, you know, I got time to listen to the sermons on the podcast and all this different, you know. It's like you appreciate things you didn't used to appreciate. The sun is bright, the grass is green, you know, everything's different, man. You're like, wow, I wish I would have done this sooner, you know.
Exactly. You know, and I always think back to times, you know, whenever I was like homeless, you know, and just strung out.
You were homeless?
Oh yeah. I mean, I was off bad.
Wow.
Off bad.
What's the worst of it? Like living like homeless, like on the street, homeless with your friends? Like
I was, you know,
I slept on some couches, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of couch surfing until I burnt all those bridges, you know, and then it was, you know, in the parks, you know. Not long in the parks until I finally, you know, was like, this sucks.
Yeah. We've witnessed I've been to many a park ministries, you know, where you go and you know, you talk to people and try and either, you know, bless them with something or just pray with them or whatever it is, you know. And I've been to a lot of these like tent cities and these kinds of places where people are really down on their luck from, you know, just having an addiction. And some of it's mental illness. Some of them say just love it. They don't want to give it up. Some people are like, I wish I could give it up, but I tried. I can't. It's not working, you know. And everybody's story is so different, but these places are so sad.
Very sad.
So sad.
No hope.
There's no hope. And the people inside of it don't even realize the hopelessness of the situation. Mm-hmm. Because they're not far. I mean, when Jesus shows up, this is my opinion, and what the Bible says and what I've experienced is that when Jesus shows up, everything can change instantly, you know? It's not going to say you're going to be in a house tomorrow, your family, your teeth are going to be better. You're like, you still have to deal with the results of the sin you were living in, you know? Mm-hmm. If you did drugs and it's ruined your health is still going to need something. You're going to need to work that out. You know what I'm saying? But your mind, your mental, like, I can wake up. I can at least be happy that I have a job, that I, you know, or like I'm not living in a tent anymore. I'm living in a hotel that the government's paying for. Like, whatever the next step is, right? You know? But we're talking to these people, man, I just know for me, it's like, I desperately want to help you. I can pray with you and I can, you know, I hope you hear what I'm saying, but it's like, you also just want to help them, give them something, do something for them. But I don't think there is really anything you can do for people who are just addicted. Like, it's like,
it's not until they want to do something for themselves.
It's so hard.
It's very hard to do, you know, cause it's something I struggle with now. Whenever I talk to people in active addiction, they're my old friends or just people reach out to me. And they're like, hey, how did you do it? Or what can I do? And I'm like, I can give you the tools, but you have to do it. Yeah. Like it's a self thing.
Yeah. And the government's not even real great at helping these. So I went to, Atlanta and I was filming, something about this couple. They have a ministry that does homeless outreach in Atlanta. And so we went with them on some of their trips and they showed us this park in Atlanta or as Athens actually. And, they had this big homeless tent city was there, and the government, they were tired of it or whatever, all these needles and stuff and everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so they brought in these big, like, whatever the machine is, got the big plow on the front of it, right? And they over all the tents, over all the needles, and they said, y'all just get out. It's like, so not only are they homeless, now they're like, homeless multiplied, you know, or whatever. Like, there goes my tent, you know, like, what do you do? And so eventually they showed us that they had moved them across the city to a secure facility. Where it has a guard and all this stuff. I don't know why homeless cities need a guard, but they put a guard up that had a fence. You know, you couldn't just walk in the city like you used to be able to in the park. So they drive me over there, and this was the crazy. Now this is where the government put everybody, next to a meat processing plant or a chicken something. It stunk worse than I'd ever smelled anything in my entire life. Talk about the dignity loss of these people. Oh, wow. Like you, they're already in the worst situation ever, and now you're like putting them literally next to trash and sewer, and like that is hard to recover from. You need an act of God to get out, you know. And so I'm just like, Lord, send angels to Athens and Atlanta, baby, because I can't fix this, you know. Like, John's not going to do nothing to help this problem, you know, but God can. And whether it's one person in that village or the whole village, I believe that that help can come. I don't believe that it's hopeless. It just looks like, send some angels, send 10,000, you know, because but I can't believe that we treat people like this. This is how we treat the people who are hurting and broken.
It is bad. And I will even say this, the recidivism,
I don't know,
right? So it's okay, can't pronounce it. People going back in and out of the prison system, right? A lot of the people in there are drug addicts, you know. A lot of people go in for drug addicted crimes.
Oh, I gotcha.
And then, you know, they have what they would call treatments in prison, and they're kind of BS.
Are they?
You know, they're not, they don't focus on the steps. They don't focus on, you know, having a higher power, finding God. They just tell you, oh, this is why you're addicted, because you do drugs all the time, and this is what it did to your brain, and this is what you should do, but we're not going to give you the steps to do it. So, and then you see people get out of prison, get right back on drugs, get some more cases, go right back to prison. And that's literally the loop I was stuck in.
Yeah.
You know, I thought I was just like, I'm doing installment plans in prison the rest of my life. That's how I thought I was.
How sad. You know, to think that.
And like this time when I got locked up, they slapped the cuffs on me and I was relieved. You know, I knew I was about to be real sick.
Yeah.
And go through a lot of withdrawals, but I was relieved. I was like, I'm not homeless no more. I got a bed. I got some food.
A better situation,
yeah,
almost. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I really dug in deep while I was in this time. Yeah. realize, you know, I'm going to change. And that's where it came from, the inside. You know, that's why whenever I preach to people about working the program and working recovery, I'm like, you gotta look inside you. Yeah. I can't, you know, I wish I could fix you, but I can't. And a big thing to help fix me is God.
Yeah. You know? So tell people about the hope you have now. Like, so how do you look at, when you look at your future now, or you look at like what you hope your future to be like, what do you see?
Oh man, endless. It's endless, man. A house one day, you know, a wife, kids, simple stuff, really. I have a lot of hope for the future, you know, because I mean, I've come to realize that I am very talented, and I'm very driven when it comes to focusing in on things I need to get done. So I mean, I just look at, I get to spend time with my family, you know, just the small things. And like, in my past, I was like, my future is to go party. My future is to do this. And like, that's not a future.
Yeah. Well, when you're young, you can't think that far ahead.
Right.
You just say like, you know, the older you get, the more like you realize how time is shortening up on us. Like, but in my 20s, like I didn't even think about the future. All I thought about was right now. Mm. What can I do today? I'm going to gamble today. I'm going to hang out today. I'm going to go to the park. I'm going to go play trivia tonight. I'm like, all I thought about was in 24-hour blocks. You know, I didn't have a calendar. My brother had kids in my 20s. I didn't even go to their births. I didn't go to their birthday party. You know, like, I did not worry about any, I was so selfish, completely selfish. And now here in my 30s, born again, I got kids and a dog, and I got a mortgage. And I got, you know, like, my life is different, you know, but I'm more hopeful about what my future looks like than I ever would have been in my 20s. Greg, let's talk some more about hope, man. What's your hope look like?
I think that the big thing that gives me hope is the fact that we're helping other people.
Yeah, it's so good.
You know,
and
that's kind of what keeps me driven, is that the chance to give back.
Yeah.
And that makes me hopeful that, you know, I can stay out of this reoccurring cycle of constantly, you know, doing good for 8 months, 10 months, 19 months, and then just going back to the same old thing that got you there in the first place.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, our little groups, gets bigger and better every time, you know, every week. And, that kind of gives me hope that being able to help other people, you know,
so. Yeah. Your group that you guys work with, is not just other addicts, right? Or
no,
there's addicts, right? No addicts on a regular basis.
Yeah, on a regular basis, it's mainly loved ones. A lot of parents of people who are in addiction are newly into recovery. We get some addicts here and there. We've helped send a couple people out to treatment to get help, you know. But it's really to help focus on the families, give them the do's and don'ts, you know, what enabling looks like. And, you know, I'm no doctor, I'm no, you know, but I can tell you from experience of what I did to enable people. So that's basically what we give out there. We teach the steps, the 12 steps to the parents. So when their loved ones going through the 12 steps, they know what they're going through.
That's tough. It's an underreported problem. Is that the families and the loved ones of people who deal with addiction, they have it rough, man. They don't understand it. It's very confusing. A lot of times it's come on suddenly. Like, when I told my family about my first gambling debt that sent me to bankrupt court, you know, like, they're like, you lost how much? Right. Like, it was an unfathomable amount of money.
Right.
And like, what? You did a gamble? When did you go gamble? Like, it's just so shocking to someone's system. And now maybe the drugs and the alcohol aren't as, you know, that shocking, you know, if they've seen you a couple times at the bar or whatnot. But they are really left hurting and reeling. In fact, as I've been studying the movie, an interesting thing I found out, because they've been legalizing sports gambling across America, state by state, over the last 3 years. And New York just got legalized the end of last year, and I think it was earlier this year. And I was talking to the people who run the government run. It's so ridiculous. So casinos get tax revenue from the government gets tax revenue from the casinos. The government then takes that tax money and then creates rehab opportunities for problem gamblers.
Right.
You know, so it's like it's the equivalent of like a dope dealer building a rehab center. You don't get no. That's conflict of interest. You know. So I talked to this group in New York who runs their bets off type place or whatever, and they said their call center after they legalized sports gambling went up 8,000% in the first month. 8,000%. And I said, well, who's calling you? And this was a great question, because she said it's not the people who are gambling, it's the moms and the girlfriends. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly calls from women. Mostly calls from women who have nothing to do with this.
Yeah, sports gambling is definitely a male dominated kind of thing.
Yeah, and so when you talk about how do you say? You know, what do you, how, you can't, like, if you're, because I've talked to counselors and I've talked to doctors who deal with psychology and counseling who try to help people, you know, they can't do nothing for the loved one, you know, like, you need to send the person who's hurting and I will help them. Mm-hmm. I can, you know, like, I can send, like, you can go to a family support group and things like that. But there's not really a lot of help. It's like the family feels so helpless, you know, because like they want so desperately, like my family, I'll use them as an example. What can we do to get you help, Johnny, and get you fixed and get this problem out of your life? But as you guys know, sometimes we like to fall down the stairs a few times. You know?
Oh, yeah. We got to. We have to, you know. And it's like we fall down, break an arm, and we're like, well, I still got an arm left. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And that's, and the family's like, what? Yeah. Like, yeah. You've broken your other arm already. And so... so for you guys to be focusing on this group to me is so inspiring. In fact, the fact that you want to show up, like, it goes to show, like, all those people who are on the phone calls in New York City, like, I'm sure they would love to have a place where they could be like, I don't know what to do. And, but at the same time, the people you're talking to are people who their kids are trying to get help.
Yeah.
So there is,
or get their kids into help.
Okay. Yeah, so it is some of the people who are like, my kid's out there right now doing this thing. And I wish I could talk them out of it.
Absolutely.
So what do those people feel like or sound like?
I mean, we've seen a couple of them come in, and we got one that's a regular occurrence every week. Yeah. And, you know, I remember seeing her from when she first started coming to our meetings to now. It's like she has hope, you know, and her loved one's still out there struggling. But, I mean, she still has hope.
Yeah.
And it's at first, like, first couple meetings, we didn't see a smile out of her, nothing. And now she comes in, smiles. We ask her how her day's going, how's life going, you know, and just – try to spread some hope for it.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's like the prodigal son story in the Bible, right? So the prodigal son goes out, he's partying, and he's lost all his money. He's lost his way. He's sleeping with the pigs, literally, you know? Mm-hmm. And he comes back home, and dad just embraces him, and he's, you know, it's going to be better. You know, sometimes having that, just someone to support you, things like that. But Greg, you were saying something. You're like, just helping people helps me. You know, and I think that that's very biblical, right? So to become good in the kingdom, you become the servant of all things. You know, it's like God says, you know, for us to give ourselves away. You know, if someone offers your jacket, give them your, you know, shirt and pants too, and, you know, you want to slap them, give them your other cheek. You know, it's like it's all about serving others. You know,
and that's the step. That's the 12th step.
Is it?
Yeah, is giving back, and you know, that's what keeps us sober.
Yeah, for me as a selfish person who was in addiction for so long, I never gave back. I remember, so I had been at church about 8 months, and this preacher had come, and he was, one of the things he said was like, you know, if you're not at church just to sit here, you better get up and, you know, sign up and help out and do something. And it's like, the church ain't about you. It's about the kingdom. It's about, you finding somebody that, you know, you can make their life better today and do something. And I was like, huh. It was like, I had never done anything that I hadn't gotten paid for as an adult, you know what I'm saying? It's like, so like the idea of volunteering was so foreign to me. So I walk up, they're like, go to the back, the info desk or whatever it was called then. And so I walk up there, I was like, I want to help out.
Like, didn't even know what to call it.
Yeah. And they're like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, tell me. I just came up here. This is my step of faith here, guys. Like, I need, you all gonna have to coach me. And they're like, well, we got this and this and this. And so I had this epiphany. I was like, what's the worst one? And they're like, well, the parking lot, because it's summertime. You got to stand out there in the hot, wave at everybody or move the signs or, you know, do whatever. And I was like, sign me up for that. I was like, I'll just work my way. I felt very like, I'm work my way up, Lord. I'll just, you know, sir. But it was so foreign to me. But I got, that was the first time that I got something out of like getting to church early, you know, setting stuff up, seeing people's faces as they walk in, their smile. And it's like, it wasn't a big deal yet. Like, serving obviously became a much bigger part of my life and my ministry and like trying to help people. But it was the first glimpse of that I'd ever had. And it's stuck with me ever since, the idea of like, it's not about you. And so when I started to like serve my family, my wife and things, it gives you a satisfaction that you don't understand until you start doing it, you know? And so for you, like, is it something you feel like is just helping you stay sober? Or is, like, I can't imagine what
it kind of fills that void of the drinking, of, you know, doing all that other. I mean, it just, you know, when the phone rings and it's another addict or another alcoholic and they just want to, hey, how's it going? Just want to check in, or they're having a bad day, you know, and they reach out to you. They could have called anybody in the world, or worse, they could have called nobody, and they chose you to call out. It's just, wow. You know, it's just kind of like, you know,
it's a high.
It's a rush.
You impressed me, Greg, and I'll tell you this. And you had this on you before all this other stuff happened, but there are some people in life, and Malcolm Gladwell calls people connectors, people who have ability to make a lot of friends with a lot of different people and know a lot of different people. And so you've been around town. You've lived in all these different places. You've worked in gaming and pizza and, you know, and construction. And, like, you have this wide net of people and experiences and all these kinds of different things. And I think it's really helpful because your personality is very, like, hey, man, how you doing? Nice to meet you. Like, I'll meet anybody. I'll hang out with anybody. I'll go talk to anybody. Like, a lot of people, like me, very introvert, like, I got to trust you before I'm even, like, ready to, like, sit and have, you know, lunch with you. You're like, you'll sit there for 4 hours with a stranger, you know? And so I've seen you do this over the years. And I think that it's proved very effective in what the role God has called you to do today, is because, like, for someone to be able to use, to know that they have their own issues, but still be willing to help somebody else through theirs. How do I say this? It inspires me. Because that's not easy to do, where you can be the guy who shows up to hear a sermon from a guy who had never done it before and encourage him and be like, man, that was so great. That was so, you know, and to hear that for me when that was just me, that was long before you got saved, long before you got out of rehab and you're experiencing it. And I can only imagine how you've been paying that same way of life forward to hundreds of people I've never met who've had a conversation with you, or had you shown up to their rehab meeting on Tuesday, or had them call you on the phone. And I'm sure you're getting phone calls from all sorts of crazy people who didn't have any idea they were going to call you that day, but all of a sudden they're calling you, and you are the voice of hope on the other end of that line. And man, God has put something special in you to be able to be that person who receives that phone call and say, man, I'm here with you. That's so good. You're doing so great.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah, you're doing so great. You're such a voice of encouragement, man. Even as long as I've known you, you've been like that. And not everybody's able to stay positive, you know, optimistic in the worst of situations. But you've always just been very, like, everything's all right, guys. It's all good. You know, like,
I was
the worst of it.
Some of those times, you know, in active addiction, obviously it's a act.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
all right.
You know, that's how my mom was, and, you know, that was one of my favorite characteristics of her, was, you know, having nothing, she'd get her power turned off to make sure that the kid down the street had a prom dress kind of a thing. And that's kind of definitely carried forward into the recovery.
Yeah. I think that it's going to pay dividends. I think as your group grows, like you had said, like, you had like 13 or 14 people in this last meeting, or one of the last meetings. Yeah. And for you guys, like you said, you've been discouraged a couple times because there's been either no turnout or very little turnout, you know?
Yeah. I think we've had one week where it's been like one or two people, you know, and it's just, it is a little discouraging, but we're there. We're going to share a message, you know, whether it's one person or if it's no one, me and Greg are just going to, you know, sit there and talk, go have lunch, go have dinner.
I think the community you guys are building is so cool, and it's so important. It's so necessary to help people. Just stop there, to help people. Like, when you're able to build a community around that, and in a space obviously needs it. I mean, Art has worked with 4,600 people. Like, that's a lot of people, and they're all coming in through the doors now. So the next 4,600 people are all going to meet Greg and Connor, and they're all going to have the opportunity to say, hey, you know, we've been through this, guys, and you guys are going to be a voice of hope and hopefully optimism, and just a calming voice in the wildness that is the world of an addict. Right.
Absolutely. And it is very wild at first. I know whenever you first get clean, first get sober, you know, all the thoughts are still there for a very long time. You know, the thoughts of drinking, the thoughts of using, and just the wildness of the havoc you created is going to constantly be a reminder in your mind.
Yep.
And then, I mean, I preach it all the time, you know, get a higher power and work them steps, you know, thank God.
Yeah. It's always important to remember that, you know, just because you find Jesus don't mean you don't have to deal with the results of your sin.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you were telling a story just last time I saw you, the first time I met you. You know, it's like you're still dealing with some of the court cases and things that are in your past.
Yes.
Even though you, and to me, like, when you talked about it, you're like, we're just praying, we're trusting God for it. You know, absolutely. Like that's a big deal, man. That is a big deal to just even have that kind of optimism. Sitting here not worried about it, you're not probably sleeping. It's probably not keeping you up at night too much, you know?
No. And I mean, there's even times the way I accepted it was I prayed on it a lot. I prayed on it a whole lot. And now I just, you know, if God sees that I need to go back in the system, I'm going to go back in the system clean. I'm going to carry a message the whole way through. You know, and that's so good. That's how I accepted it, because God's got me. God's got me on a path. You know, we don't know exactly what that path is.
Yeah.
And that may be a part of it, and I had to accept that, and yeah. I do.
Man, it's been a great talk, guys. You guys have inspired me, man. How can people? Do you want to let people know how to come to this thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's Tuesday night, 6:00. Usually runs 2 hours or so. If it needs to go longer, we'll stay and talk to anybody as long as they want to talk.
Yeah.
Rarely do we cut out before 8:00, though, but you're free to come and go as you want.
Mm-hmm.
It is at the ACPD office, which is at 5228 South Lindbergh, Tesson Ferry.
Tesson. St. Louis.
We'll
put the address and we'll put the links and stuff. And you guys got a Facebook group or no?
We do not have a Facebook group. You can tag us, put our pages on.
ACPD
there.
Does have it, a group, and usually Art puts something out on either Monday night or Tuesday morning. So you can join the ACPD Facebook group and get more info from there. You could always scroll through their posts too.
Yeah. Awesome, guys. Well, I'm so encouraged by you guys' story. I had to bring you on. Anytime I come across people who have changed their life for Jesus, I want to talk to them. And to see you, Greg, I mean, I'm so encouraged by what's going on in your life, and I can't wait to see you even a year from now and see the journey that God's pulled you through. And like, I don't know what exactly He's going to have you be doing, but man, I see great things for your future. I see, you know, you having a lot of influence and a lot of people who are hurting and broken, and I believe that God's going to, you know, touch your heart even more to, you know, expand your relationship with Jesus and just see things that you could never believe that you're a part of seeing. So I just want to encourage you with that. And I want to encourage anybody who is looking for help in addiction, or you got a family member who is looking for help, go find these guys, man. They are a breath of fresh air in this space. And so I will put all those links in the bio below. But thanks for watching today's episode, guys. And until next time, we pray you discover a future and a hope for your life today. We ain't trying to blend in. If you're ready, come on with us, my friend. Come on. We can change the world.
Hey, we can change the world. Let's go. What changes the world? The only thing that ever really changes the world is when somebody gets the idea that love can abound and can be shared.